everybody. I'm Stephanie Beaumont, and this is CNB Seen and Heard. For 7.5 years now, I've been celebrating all the people, places, and things that make the four Atlantic provinces so very special on my website at cnbseen.com and on CNB Seen TV2. And so I'm ever so grateful to the good folks here at Cove FM in beautiful Hubbards, Nova Scotia, for giving me the chance to expand our East Coast celebration to the wonderful world of radio. And now with each broadcast, I want to bring you just a little bit closer to some of the amazing personalities that make up this corner of the planet. They may be native to Nova Scotia or New Brunswick, Prince Edward Island or Newfoundland and Labrador, or they may be kindred spirits who simply adore living and working in Atlantic Canada. The only requirement here is that you're willing to raise the fun flag and wave it in salute of Canada's awesome East Coast. Our chats will be just that, very conversational, not entirely sensible, and with any luck, totally enjoyable. Well, I first met today's phenomenal guest back in 2011, just a wee bit south of here, in fact, in Lunenburg, Nova Scotia, where the Labrador-born, Toronto-based actor was busy shooting a feature film called The Disappeared. And truth be told, our coverage of Sean Doyle has been nonstop ever since. Just do a search on CNBC and you'll see he's done a ton of work on the big and small screen with roles in everything from hit series like Fargo and House of Cards to his award-winning miniseries John A. Birth of a Nation to his most recent film Away from Everywhere. And then there's his currently running shows, three of them in fact, Bellevue, Frontier, and The Expanse, and a whole lot more. And that's just the past 7 years. I mean, you'd really have to check out his IMDb page to get the full roster of his roles. From guest starring on Emmy winners like Desperate Housewives and Lost, to his regular roles on shows like HBO's Smash Big Love, to starring turns in shows like Endgame, to his movies like Grown Up Movie Star and Frequency. Well, there's a ton of it, to say the least. And then there's his stage work. Yep, it's fair to say, buddy's been busy. But truth be told, it's his incredibly great talents as an actor that keep him in such great demand. So we'll do our best to cover it all, plus get the scoop on his life in Labrador, his love of baths, and a whole lot more. Here's my conversation with the one and only Sean Doyle. Ladies and gentlemen, from the province of Newfoundland and Labrador, it is multi-award-winning star of stage and screen and whatnot. He's one of my favorite people on the planet. He's Sean Doyle. How are you now?
I'm grand. How are you doing, Stephanie Beaumont?
I'm good. Now, here's the thing, just for the sake of full transparency, you're a wee bit under the weather, so I appreciate you taking the time. Are you going to make it through this hour?
It depends on the questions, but I will do my best, Stephanie.
Okay, very good.
I'm on the tail end of this flu. It's just that my voice may sound worse than I am actually feeling.
Okay, well, fair enough. Sean Doyle, you never stop. To be honest, you're always busy. And do you know what? And I don't know if you've ever done the math on this, but I went to IMDb to make sure I was correct. And do you know that you have over 80 roles to your credit?
I did not know that.
Does it seem like you've done that much work? I mean, to me it does, because
no,
you never stop.
No, it doesn't at all. That's so weird. Well, I mean, I think when you start to get up there in the credits, more or less means that you're getting old.
Oh, come on.
You've been around a long time. You've been long in the tooth.
No, that's not true.
But no, it doesn't feel like that at all. God, no.
Yeah.
It feels like almost every time I start something, it's like starting at the beginning.
That's good. I guess that keeps it fresh for you. But there's certainly a lot of ground to cover. Actually, there's not a lot of people on the planet that can say, I have a few series on the go right now. But you've been in theater in the last year. You've had movies we need to talk about. So I'm going to start right now with the project that is on everybody's lips. And I don't know that I've seen a bigger push on a project in the last little while than WGN has put on Bellevue.
Yeah.
Are you amazed by that?
Well, I'm very excited by the support that they're giving the show. It's really phenomenal. Often in Canada, there are series that are picked up by American networks. It's happened, you know, in the past.
Right.
When I heard that the show was being picked up by WGN in the States, I thought, well, that's good, you know. It'll appear in the first season, and some people might watch it. And it's just nice to know that a few more faces will get in front of the show. get in contact with the PR people, and they rolled out this huge promotional plan, which included bringing us all to LA and doing a huge press junket there. And by the way, sidebar.
Yes.
I get down there to do the press junket, and I land on a Saturday night and Sunday morning. I'm right across from the Pantages Theater in Los Angeles, and Hamilton is playing there. And, you know, that show has been sold out everywhere for months and months and months, and the tickets are crazy expensive. So I just thought, I've got nothing to do this afternoon. I think I'll just walk across and see if there's anything available for the matinee, maybe a rush ticket, or maybe there's a scalper up front or something. So I went to the box office, and I said, is there any chance to see the show today in a couple hours? And they said, actually, there's one ticket left.
Come on.
And the ticket was in the second row. It was... I'll tell you the cost, because relative to what people are paying, it's nothing. It's a lot of money, but
yeah.
It costs $250, but tickets are regularly $1,000 for that show.
Wow.
So I don't know why and how, but I got to see Hamilton, and it was everything that they're saying.
Really?
Which to me is very surprising. I'm rarely, you know, when you go with high expectations and all the hype, it's rare that it's as great as people are saying this, but it is a phenomenal piece of theater. I mean, it is profound. It stuck with me for such a long time.
Wow. Okay, that's a good sidebar. And we're going to get back to theater too, because I have a couple of questions on that. But I'm glad to hear of your jaunt. But now back to business on Bellevue.
Excuse me. Pardon me for my latency, my linear latency. So anyway, we went down. We did a great junket that lasted. You know, there was tons and tons and tons of outlets from across the country. It was very well done. The online promotion has been stunning, and the social media campaign has been very strong. And, I mean, even in L.A., there's enormous billboards. And on Times Square, there were billboards, digital billboards in Times Square.
Right.
So,
what do you make of that? Like, as a fan of the show, I'm hopeful.
Yeah, you know, clearly... The idea is to promote the hell out of the show and get enough people to watch it that they can justify actually producing a second season of the show. You know, I don't think I'm talking out of school to say that.
That's, no.
They wouldn't put this kind of money on it. I think they want to get on the boards with a really strong show. And so, yeah, I remain hopeful, too. We'll see. The numbers for the first week were very strong.
Yes.
From what I understand. I don't know what they are for the second week yet, and of course they will dip, particularly because it was State of the Union night.
But, right.
I'll be really curious to know how it all plays out. The funny thing is, of course, when you do a show and you're so passionate about it and you commit to it 100%, and you give so much of yourself, and then it goes on the air, and it was very disappointing how it all kind of played out here in Canada, quite frankly. And it's hard to stay as attached to an outcome, you know, having gone through that one time. So I think that we're all a lot more calmly, we have a calmer perspective on it now.
Cautiously optimistic. But, you know, we've talked about this show on CNBC and Heard before with your co-star, young Billy McClellan from Cape Breton. And one of the things he talked about was just the camaraderie and the great vibe on set. And there was that real belief that the, you know, behind the project, and everybody felt like this is it. And so.
Yeah, well, you know. I remember the first, when we sat down into the first read-through and rehearsals and whatnot, Adrian Mitchell got up and said, we really made a choice to hire non-
Yeah.
That was a policy.
Right.
And I think it has to be a conscious policy, to be honest with you. You really have to be conscious of the people that you're bringing together, and it doesn't always work. But it certainly did. We had such a great time. It really was one of the great bonding experiences of my career, for sure. All of us, we really did believe in the project, and we had a great time hanging out. It was wonderful. It really was a special experience, for sure.
Very good. Well, I'll keep my candle burning for that one. And now another one, Frontier, this bananas, huge, monstrous project out of St. John's and Take the Shot. It's just... amazing. And I was so fortunate to be on set for the first season. But tell me what that show is like to shoot, Sean, because I know you've been in projects of every genre. But what is that like? Is it cool to be a part of that period and that bloodshed and all that stuff?
The period stuff is great. The wardrobe for that show is phenomenal, right? And, you know, Michael Ground, the costume designer, gets recognized every award season. I mean, it's really special to wear that kind of stuff. It's fun. Great shoes.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's actually challenging to shoot because they are reliant on so many people's different schedules that it really is a bit ad hoc how they have to schedule it. So you fly in and you might shoot all of your scenes from one episode in the same day, or you might shoot a couple scenes from one episode and then a couple scenes from a future episode because we're at the same location, and so they're just doing what's called block shooting, getting it all at once. And so it can be challenging to kind of just fly into Newfoundland and then be dropped into the show and shoot a half a day or a day or a couple of days and then fly out again. You know, it's a bit discombobulating for me anyway. It's not the preferable way. I'd rather kind of be immersed in a place, settle in, and, you know, have time to breathe. And, you know, for example, I went there last week to begin season three, and I was actually sick, so that didn't help anything. But I just remember when we talked about this, me and Greg Brick and Lila Porter Follows and some other people that were around, but it felt as if we were just there a week ago, and yet it really did feel like we hadn't been in these clothes and played these characters for a year, you know?
Right.
And so it's a really strange feeling, and I think it would be easier in terms of the actual acting if you know, you're all there more consistently, but that's just how it goes. Everybody has very busy lives and careers, and there's a ton of characters in that show, and so.
But you're back for season three, so that is cool. Now, another show that's in season three, and I promise I won't grill you on all of these things.
Am I talking too much? You know,
no, I'm loving it. I never get to talk to you. This is wonderful.
I'll just say, Sean, just pull it together, man.
No, I love it. Okay, so now, and I'm just going to sort of run down the litany of projects you're on, and then we'll get on to other topics. But season three of Expanse, you've already shot that, and folks are keen for it to air. When's the Expanse season three going to premiere? Anything you can share?
I have no idea. To be honest with you, I finished shooting that in early November.
Right.
So I don't know what the plans are. I would imagine that based on the ADR I've been doing, the ADR is when you go in after you shoot into the studio and you sometimes re-record your dialogue because of technical problems or performance problems, whatever. It's part of what's called post-production.
Not with you, performance problems. No way.
Everyone has performance problems right there. Everyone. But no, mostly it's normally technical considerations. Too much noise on set, the mic that was scratchy or windy or whatever.
Right.
Anyhow, I've been doing a lot of ADR for that show, so I know that they've picked up the pace this year, so I imagine that in the next, I'm sure you could probably Google it and find out, but I would imagine in the next month or two, it's probably going to premiere. It feels like they were pushing to stay on that schedule.
Right. I think it's March, if memory serves.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, but I didn't know. I thought maybe you could give us some scoop. You know, I'm always looking to go viral, right? So this is going to be on the air and then go to podcast. And if people can just, you know, play the beep out of this, that'd be awesome. Yeah. Now, Sean, here's the thing. And you just sort of touched on it. How?
Well, hang on a second. This is a thing? Is it happening right now? Okay, hang on. I just need to have a bit of coffee.
Okay. Are you back with us? Now, you're in a new kitchen. Are you in your new kitchen?
Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, I just did a little Instagram story of showing you the state of my renovations, which is a little...
Wait a minute. Are you handy, too?
Well, in fact, I am handy.
What?
My brother and I did... my house in Los Angeles, we redid. But I'm not doing that up here right now because, of course, I don't have the time and I don't have any tools and equipment and my brother's way too busy. So
you've hired a pro.
I'm hiring people and paying them all.
Yeah.
Getting the money to get this done.
Right.
I'm halfway through renovations right now, so it's a bit crazier.
But that's exciting. A new house. Hey, all these projects that, you know, you've got some on the go, some you did years ago and they're just coming out. What are you doing now that we're going to see in the years to come? Is there anything you can tell us about?
Yes.
Tell me.
Well, first of all, I shot a series called Impulse, which is the first YouTube series. And it was exec produced by Doug Liman of Born Identity and Edge of Tomorrow fame. So, yeah, so I did that. I just wrapped, in fact, a week ago.
Was that the picture of the hat that you had on Instagram that you said, thanks, old friend, or something like that?
That's correct. least 80% of my acting for me. And that was a really interesting experience, and I don't know how much I'm actually allowed to talk about the show at this point, but it's kind of a really interesting mix of sci-fi and just very human drama, so I'm really curious to see how that turns out.
What are we talking, like 6 episodes, 20 episodes? How does that work?
10 episodes.
Okay. And is it procedural? Like, are they one-off episodes? It's a story?
I guess you could call it a sci-fi thriller, or I don't really know. It's maybe a genre-bending kind of show, because, like I said, there's sci-fi elements, but it's a very human story at the center of it. So, as opposed to, you know, a lot of sci-fi is often just a metaphor, right? There's real dramatic stuff at the core of this.
Cool. Who are you with? Who's your cast?
I worked with lovely Missy Pyle a little bit. I got to hang out with her a bit. She's a wonderful, wonderful person. My best friend in the world is also on the show, but we never had and will never have any scenes together, which is sad. Matt Gordon of Rookie Blue fame.
Right.
My primary work was with David James Elliott of JAG fame.
Wow.
And he was really got along. He's a wonderful, wonderful guy. I'm really happy to have met him. Very down to earth, Canadian originally, and really good actor. We had a great old time acting together.
Fantastic. Sean Doyle, one thing we have to talk about is your time on the theater stage with The Orange Dot last year.
Yes.
Huge reviews. What was it like to be back on the stage?
Oh, it was great. So my partner, PJ Prudat, Paula Jean Prudat, I just come back from watching her do a one-woman show out in Vancouver called Moon Lodge.
Right.
And it was really a beautiful piece of theater. And I said to myself, so driving along the Gardner Expressway here, as I said to myself a million times, when am I going to do another play? How am I going to figure that out?
Right.
And I got a text from director Vicki Anderson, who said, this is a really weird question, but is there any way you could see yourself jumping into a role? We just lost our actor 1 week into rehearsals of a 3-week rehearsal period. Is there something you would consider? And because I had just said to the universe, when am I going to do a play, I had to read it and consider it, and I did, and I said yes. And so I jumped in, and it was 80 pages, two-hander.
Oh, my God.
80 pages. And being back on stage is fine. It's like riding a bike. You don't forget those skills, you know, when I did it for so many years. But the lines, Steph, 80 pages.
Wow.
I was in pure mortal terror, as my mom would say, for 2 weeks. I'm serious. And, you know, thankfully, my partner, Daniela Vleskalic, wonderful person who's now one of my really good friends, and Vicki Anderson, the director, who has been my friend, and they were just so patient with me, and realized that I was freaking the F out.
Right.
And so they did everything possible to be super calm about it. I don't even know to this day how they actually felt, because really it took so long to get the lines. But, it was fantastic to be back on stage. I love it so much. I wish I could do more of it.
Yeah.
And that was a great play, because it was very audacious and risky, and it was great.
Okay, so you do that piece of theater, and then just recently have this amazing experience with Hamilton. Did that in any way spur you on to want to do a musical?
I started out doing a bit of musical theater in the early days. I did a lot of singing in theater school, and I had a lot of people who were trying to convince me that I should be a musical theater person.
Really?
I could sing, but I never really had that thing, that click with musical theater. And I did it. I did a number of plays and whatnot. And
you did Grease?
For 6 months.
Who were you?
I was Kinnicky.
No, you weren't.
I go, Grease lightning, you burn up the core. Yep, every night. I did that.
Really?
In a car that was built over a golf cart. It was pretty funny.
Where was that, Sean?
Stage West in Toronto or Etobicoke.
Right on.
Yeah, I did a lot of musical theater. I did West Side Story at the Stephenville Festival when I first started out, and then I did a number of cabaret shows there. I also had a strange voice, because people told me that I was a tenor. But I could hit certain notes, but it never really felt comfortable. But I certainly wasn't a baritone. Right. Now I would be embarrassed, so, but not back then.
With your flu.
Yeah.
Okay, so now let me ask you this then. You're growing up. I want to say
let me just say this. My dream of mine is to play Sweeney Todd. I will say that Sondheim is my all-time favorite, and that musical is stunning and really challenging. It would be an incredible challenge to do that role, I think. So I would love to do that.
That would be good. Now, let me tell you this. Alan Hocko, who has the company theater, has talked about bringing the company theater to Neptune Theater here in Halifax. And wouldn't that be awesome to mount Sweeney Todd, starring Sean Doyle?
Very good.
Right? Let me get on that. But first, let me ask you a few more questions. So, Wabush, right? Am I right about that? I always get it wrong. I want to say Labrador City, but that's not right. It's Wabush.
That's right, Steph. I was born in Labrador City, and I went the whole 3 miles and grew up in Wabush.
And what was that like for those of us playing the home game? Give us, like, the day in the life of a young Sean Doyle.
It involved a lot of food because I was quite a heavy child. But now, in terms of the mining town in the middle of nowhere.
Okay.
And very harsh conditions. I think the other day was minus 40 there or some crazy thing like that. But, you know, when you grow up around that, that's just what you know. And so you find your way to all kinds of great outdoor sports, skidooing and skiing. I skied 3 times a week when I was a teenager. It was a really tight-knit community, actually.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, the cars all had to be plugged in all the time, and if my parents went shopping down at the Dominion, they'd leave the cars running while they went shopping so the battery didn't explode because of the temperatures, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was a great place to grow up. I had a lot of good friends and a lot of adventures. of adventures. What a cheesy thing to say.
No, that's fair.
A lot of adventures up in Labrador. Some of them I can tell you, some of them I can't.
Fair enough. It's not that kind of show. Okay, and you come from an acting family. So was it always something you wanted to do?
Yeah, I mean, my dad was actually a founding member of a local community group called the Carol Players. I think first they were actually a choir, and then they turned into a theater troupe. And that group just ended up, for whatever cosmic reasons, becoming really, really strong and traveling the world, representing Canada at world festivals and all kinds of stuff. And so, you know, I grew up watching my dad rehearse and perform these plays and do very well at festivals and all that kind of stuff. And my mother was involved in fundraising for the group and makeup. Yeah, so I was around it all the time. I spent my weekends watching rehearsals, helping out if I can with set building and that sort of thing.
Right.
But it wasn't until I was, 13 or 14 that a wonderful teacher named Cindy Fleet came to me and asked me to be involved in a play, and that's what started it for me.
And what was that role? Do you remember?
No, I don't remember the first play, but I do remember, you know, we did A Tale of Two Cities, Twelfth Night, that my dad actually directed me in.
Wow.
For the provincial festival.
Good director?
And, he certainly was at that point with me.
Yeah, very good.
For sure, he is a good director. He went on to be the artistic director of Stephen Festival for a number of years, 6 years, I think it was.
Right. I was actually just kidding. Although there's probably some listeners out there that wouldn't know that, but we promote all of those wonderful Newfoundland productions on CNBC. And hey, you know what, Sean? Can you believe that time has flown by to the point that we need to take a commercial break?
Oh, my goodness.
Can you believe?
That's 'cause I'm talking.
No, I love it. I love it. We've got tons of stuff to talk about. And I also want to play a brand new game I came up with just for you. And I have some probing questions and a couple of deep Oprah-esque questions that I want to get to. But right now we're going to take our first break here on CNBC and Heard, and we'll be right back with the award-winning and wonderful Sean Doyle. Welcome back to CNBC Seen and Heard here on Cove FM. I'm Stephanie Beaumont, and our special guest today is award-winning NL fella, Sean Doyle, who really has traveled the world for his craft, with more than a few roles here on Canada's East Coast. Of course, his work in Frontier has him back and forth to St. John's these days, as did his returning role as the infamous Karl Marr on Republic of Doyle over the course of their 6 seasons. Just a few years ago, he shot the Lifetime movie Lizzie Borden Took an Axe in Halifax alongside Christina Ricci, and a few years before that, he spent a number of weeks just off the East Coast, floating on the Atlantic Ocean in a dory while he shot The Disappeared. Let's continue in conversation now with Sean Doyle. Sean, you were here shooting in Lunenburg, which mathematically is about maybe half an hour from Hubbard's, if that helps you, but down the South Shore. Beautiful, right?
I'm sure I went down. I love the South Shore so much.
Yeah.
So much. Hey, what's the weather like there now?
Freezing, cold. We're having flash, freezing rain. How about you?
It's very, very cold. Yesterday it was about 5 degrees above. Today it's about minus 12.
Right. Where are you on global warming? Like, who can deny it? Am I right?
Well, apparently people can, and I just don't understand that. Well, I do understand it. I understand. Well, whatever. Let's not go down some political route with this. It'll take us to a dark, dark place.
Okay, then let's not. I just find it bananas that literally it was 10 degrees today, and we're going down to what will feel like minus 20 tomorrow morning. So something's hinky.
It's like the whole world has turned into St. John's weather.
Right?
Which should never be. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
Come on.
Crazy over there.
Well, listen, that actually segues ever so beautifully into my next question, which was, and I don't know if you can remember our very first interview, but we talked about...
I forget.
Oh, well. I would imagine mathematically you've done a number of them between then and now. But we talked about you doing Grown Up Movie Star and what it took for you to come back to do that project. But what prefaced that was that you said you couldn't wait to leave. And I remember you saying how great it is now to go back. And can you tell me what it's like, what it feels like now when they say, ladies and gentlemen, we're landing in St. John's? How does that feel? Even though you're hurried a lot, but empirically, how does it feel?
It really does feel like something's able to settle, like something just kind of clicks inside, you know? I spent not much time in St. John's or on the East Coast of Newfoundland growing up. I'd go there some summers for a little bit of time. I grew up in Labrador, and I spent my summers on the west coast of Newfoundland around Stephenville in the Port of Port Peninsula.
Right.
But there's no doubt, man, when I land anywhere in Newfoundland now and I smell the air, it's just like all your cells vibrate.
Yeah.
At the right frequency when you're back in your home, I think.
Right.
I do love it. I love it. I love it.
Cool.
Except for the weather in St. John's, though. That weather in St. John's really is an offensive thing. I mean, seriously, Steph. Stephenville is fantastic. It's winter when it's winter, and it's summer when it's summer. And Labrador is winter for 10 months of the year, but at least you know what it's going to be. But St. John's can be raining in the morning and then blizzard in the afternoon,
right,
and then fog overnight. It's just crazy.
It's a cornucopia of weather, is what it is.
It's a veritable buffet of storm conditions. Before we get into this new scary game of yours, we had sidetracked because I'm just going all over the place here. There is another project coming up that I'm really excited about.
Oh, tell me.
I can tell you.
Yes, please do.
The project is a limited run series or miniseries. I'm not sure officially what it's called, but it is about the tainted blood scandal of the 80s.
You're kidding.
I don't know how familiar you or the audience is with that, but basically around 1984, at the time when AIDS knowledge was starting to grow and people understood that there was this disease out there that was being transmitted very fast, hemophiliacs around North America became infected with HIV because there was no screening processes for it with the Red Cross or any of these blood collection agencies. And up to 90% of hemophiliacs became sick with AIDS.
What?
With HIV and AIDS, based on the fact that once the governing bodies knew about the tainted blood, they didn't do anything about it because financially it didn't make sense to them.
Wow.
To call a recall at that point. Yeah, it's a horrible black mark on our history. Yeah, so this miniseries I'll be doing out in Vancouver this summer. It's called Unspeakable. It's an 8-part miniseries. And it follows two families that have been affected by this tainted blood crisis.
And who are you in this?
And how they react differently to the situation.
What's your role, Sean?
I play a character named Ben, who is a journalist who has a very strange reaction to the fact that his son is potentially infected with HIV. And it's based on a real person. It's really exciting. I don't know. There's been no other people officially cast at this point. I was the first one on board. But some of the names I'm hearing are really exciting. And it's a CBC, BBC, AMC co-production.
Wow.
I think it'll be aired on Sundance Channel, potentially.
That's awesome. I wonder, how do you decide what to do, Sean Doyle? Like, are you getting projects pitched to you all the time, or are things coming on your radar? Do you hear, you know, are you like out to dinner with somebody and somebody's like, I'm working on this or I'm writing this? Like, how do you go about curating work, so to speak? It seems like you never stop.
Well, yeah, I've been really fortunate. There's no doubt about it. I'm so lucky that people think about me for all these things. I'm really grateful for that, and I try to stay grateful. I don't know. I mean, in the olden days, you know, when I was starting out, and I spent a decade not being arrested, you know, and it was all about creating my own work and doing different events and workshopping and doing readings at my house and doing theater for no money and all that kind of stuff to kind of engender some interest in you. But now I you know, people contact my representation and they come to me, and you know, there's all kinds of reasons. We're at the whims of the industry whether people are going to hire us or not. It's not like I can sit back and pick and choose. People offer me work, and I will say, what are the merits of doing this? And often it's a good role or a good story, or you're going to get to work with someone that you really like, or sometimes it's, I really need to make this money right now, so I got to do this job. And sometimes that has happened too, you know.
I always remember Amy Adams in one of those Hollywood Reporter roundtable interviews, and all the actresses were sitting around and they were talking about what it's like to be a working actor. And, you know, Amy Adams had just been nominated for an Oscar, and she said, you know, for the most part, I'm an unemployed actress. You know, and
yeah.
You never really think about, I certainly don't as a fan, you never think about that, but I wonder how you do. I mean, I just spoke with Kristen Pellerin the other day, and we were talking about auditioning and that process and how the world has changed. It used to be a room that you'd go into, and now it's self-tapes and all that kind of stuff. How are you with all of that?
I hate it. Everyone, I mean, you know, actors, we have all in our various times convinced ourselves that this is an opportunity to act.
Right.
It's great that we're getting opportunities. And it's true. It is great for people to get opportunities. But that doesn't make it any less nerve-wracking, time-consuming, energy-draining. Whenever I have to do a self-tape, and admittedly, I still have to do some self-tapes for big American projects, for
right.
example. And I do them all at home. I've got all my own equipment. I do it all here now. But it requires so much work to do an audition. You spend the day before, you know, I can spend the entire day prepping to do a 3-scene audition the next day in terms of getting the lines down to figure out what it is and to allow it to sit around in your body and to, you know, for it to have any kind of reality, any truth for yourself in it. And, yeah, auditioning is a really, it's a necessary evil, I suppose, but it can be really challenging. And I know many, many actors who just stop doing it because they just reach a point where they just can't audition anymore. And putting together, doing that work, and then being rejected. You know, it's really a challenging life.
Yeah.
For sure. And I'm sure Kristen said something along the same lines.
Yeah, she said it was a skill in and of itself. Like, it was a discipline, you know, beyond acting. That's what she said. You know, I'm paraphrasing
she was
now.
More
but
optimistic than I was.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it is, though. It truly is a skill. It's not the same as you being with another actor and creating kind of a moment between yourselves. It's you kind of pretending there's a whole world around you. And the worst ones are, I mean, we've all had such crazy auditions. I remember once I had to go in and fake an orgasm, which I don't even know that they would do that anymore, given the
current climate.
But,
indeed.
I mean, Can you imagine?
No.
And the weird thing is, I never for a second thought, this is inappropriate. This is something that should never be asked of an actor. You just go, oh man, I got to go have an orgasm tomorrow in front of a bunch of people. It's just a very bizarre thing that we do.
Right.
For sure. And then there's also, you have auditions where you have to do all this action. There's stage directions in the scenes with people punching and kicking and running and jumping and stuff, and you have to figure out what the hell are you going to do with that stuff so you don't look like a complete moron, and yet you somehow can get across what, the essence of the action is. And yeah, it really is a skill unto itself, for sure, and some people are really good at it.
Now, I remember when we were on set for Frontier, and you were talking to me about what acting really is listening. And I wondered, of all of the people that you've worked with, and there's been a lot, can you name a couple of unbelievable acting partners, true listeners, where you were in the moment and things just clicked?
Oh, God. Yeah, so many. So many. And it almost seems unfair to single certain people out because...
Well, give me a couple. Like, just magical moments where you're like, oh... Because, I can't imagine what it's like. I certainly enjoy all of your performances, but they're all tremendously different. I mean, you do have such a breadth of work to pick from. But, I love the romantic ones, which are few and far between, and that's a whole other topic we'll have to talk about. But I think about, when you're really... scary and you're very aloof and powerful, and I just wondered, because in all of those moments you're acting off of other people, so obviously, I don't know if you're getting things from the actors, if there's anybody you can remember.
Totally, yeah. And if I remember with the person who is not particularly strong or good, then I'm not particularly strong or good either. I'm just not one of those actors who can create. There are certain actors who I remember, Gary Fleeter, a big Hollywood director, saying to me once that he had directed Gene Hackman and Dustin Hoffman and Runaway Jury. Do you remember that
movie? Oh, I love that movie. That's one of those movies, if it's on, I have to watch it.
It's really good. Anyway, he just said, Gene Hackman could act to a microphone. Like, he could act to a pencil on a desk. He's just that he can create an entire thing for himself. But, personally... that's not very much fun in my perception of things. It's much more fun to create something with someone else. So if you're asking me certain people, people that jump to mind, Jeannie Triplehorn I remember the first time I ever did a scene with her on Big Love. I just remember her being so incredibly present, and her eyes were so transparent,
Yeah.
Her thoughts were so transparent, and it just becomes effortless. And then, of course, Tatiana, that I did Corona Movie Star with.
Yes.
The same thing, just so...
She was really young then, Sean. You saw Star right away.
Yeah, I really lobbied for her to play that role, even though she wasn't from the command, because I knew that it required someone of that skill and talent to play that character.
Right.
So I pat myself on the back about that one.
There you go.
For sure. It's one of the high points of my career, making that choice. There's so many people. I have this very odd relationship. Greg Brick and I on Frontier right now, we have a very interesting relationship, our characters, and so much of that is born of us just being present with each other in the moment and stuff happening, and then the creators witnessing that. Now they've actually written that in as kind of the focal point of our relationship.
Your dynamic. And he's a cool cat, huh? That Greg Brick?
He is a cool cat. He's a wonderful actor, and we had a scene the other day when I did something very unexpected to him, and his response, I just remember afterwards, I just came to him laughing, because it was just, it was so not the response an actor would have if they had planned to give a response,
Right.
That's the thing. We all, as actors, we often come up with what we think are going to be great choices, but the choices that you come up with back in your dressing room or whatever are never as good as the choices that just happen because you happen to be listening really well in a scene.
Right.
And something spontaneously just happens purely through reaction, Yeah, there's so many. I can make a list.
Yeah.
I've been blessed to work with so many excellent, excellent, excellent actors.
Right. I just want to say Anna Paquin, too, if you don't mind. And I'm imagining...
Anna Paquin. I was actually... That was on my mind, and then got onto Greg Brick all of a sudden. But yeah, Anna Paquin. And another thing happens, too, when you work with really, really good actors, and Anna's a great example, I was about to say this earlier. Sorry, Anna, if you're listening to this. I was thinking about you this entire time.
There you go.
You know I was, right? Anna? Anna?
I love...
You know I was. Don't be a jerk, Anna. You know I was thinking about you. When I started working with her, we didn't talk about anything. We just did it. And, you know, sometimes you look into another person's eyes, another actor's eyes, and you just go, okay, it's all going to be okay. Like, you're going to be taken care of. You feel safe. You know that you can take a risk. You know, you can jump off a cliff and try stuff, and it's going to be received well, and more than likely they're going to be able to hit the ball back to you really well. And that's Anna.
Yeah.
And when you work with those actors like Anna, it's not work, right? It's just like you're talking to, like we were talking right now. That's all it is.
Yeah.
You're just talking to someone, and the work goes out of the way, and then it's about, well, wonder what's going to happen. Let's find out.
Right. I remember writing a note to Jane Maggs on Twitter, and I don't know if she took it as a compliment, but I meant it in the highest order. And without spoiling the finale, it was like a Bridges of Madison County moment. Did you ever see that movie, Sean Doyle?
Mm-hmm.
Did you think that?
No, I did not think that.
But do you now?
Oh, yeah. For sure.
You're mean. I'm serious.
No. Well, I will tell you, though, that final scene, which I think is my best work on that show, personally.
Are you being serious? I never know if you're being serious now.
Of course I'm being serious. When do I ever talk about my best work?
I'm dead serious. I love that.
My best work has been. I think that there's this, and the reason why I think it's my best work is because there's a scene when I confess something to her towards the end of the final episode that I just didn't know. I didn't think I had any connection to it at all. It's a really kind of radical twist that Jane added to the character late in the day. And I just remember after a couple takes, I just went over to Adrian and Jane and I just said, it's just words.
Yeah.
They're just words. And I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just saying these words. But I think that, like, my pure sense of being lost in it and trying to find my way out of it was exactly what the character was doing in that moment. And then entirely supported by what Anna was doing, which was just listening so intensely and having, you know, a million reactions to what I was saying every second.
Right.
That somehow the act of actually just, it's almost like doing a labor, like doing a job. The actual effort of trying to work through that was what makes the scene work so well. And also, I had no friggin' idea what I was doing.
Oh my God. I want to say that if that doesn't make people want to watch Bellevue, you and I, talking about something we can't talk about, but talking about it so long. Oh my God, it was so good. Yeah, and if there's any reason for a second season, it was the last 7 minutes of that episode. But I digress. Okay, we're going to run out of time and we have to get this game in. So I want to take one more break. Welcome back to CNBC Seen and Heard here on Cove FM. I'm giddy because I'm talking to Sean Doyle, who, let's be clear, I think is amazing. You're in Toronto right now, is that right?
I am.
All right. But you're heading off somewhere, aren't you? Or are you there for a while now working on your renovations and whatnot?
I'm working on my renovations and whatnot. And I will be back and forth to Newfoundland for the next little bit, shooting season 3 of Frontier. And potentially we'll be going overseas to shoot something. And then I will be going to Vancouver to shoot a miniseries in the end of March.
And do you like that? Are you a homebody or do you like traveling? Because your work has taken you all over the place.
I think it's changed since I was younger. When you're younger and you get to travel everywhere, it's very exciting. And, you know, they put you up in nice hotels and all that kind of stuff. And it's good to see bits of the world that way. But as you get older, you kind of want to just stay at home more. And the traveling is really kind of a necessary evil of the job, you know?
Right.
But sometimes you get to go to really nice locations.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky enough to have some time at those locations, it's great. But often you just get flown in, you do your thing, you fly back, and you don't even get a chance to see it.
Right.
Although I will say I've been very lucky on two particular occasions. I did an episode of Lost years ago, and I worked for 2 days, and I had 10 days off, and then I worked for 2 days. And that was amazing. And then a few years ago, I was a regular on a show called Covert Affairs for a season.
Love that show.
Yeah, it was fun. And a really good group of people. And we ended up traveling a fair amount. One of the places we ended up in was Istanbul. And again, I was there for a long time. And I shot one day and had a just an incredible time learning about that city. What an incredible place that is.
Cool. Okay, so Sean, we've come to the point in our program where we're about to launch a brand new game on CNBC Seen and Heard. I know you've played Insights in 10, so I had to come up with something that was, well, interesting. I'm hopeful. So are you game?
I'm game.
Now, this one is called More or Less. Question number one. If you had one more chance to do one more take on one more role, what would it be?
Easy.
What?
That would be, there's a scene when I'm in a hayloft in Big Love, and it's a scene when my brother Bill, played by the wonderful Bill Paxton, God rest his soul, says to me that we can't go after Roman for killing one of my wives because he's about to do a deal with Roman. Roman is the prophet.
Okay.
Played by Harry Dean Stanton. And God rest his soul.
Yeah, right? Oh, and, man.
Yeah.
You're bringing me down with question number one.
See? There's no way around it for whatever reason.
I'm just kidding. Okay, two big talents.
I'm going to give you the answer here. All of that aside,
okay.
I had to do a scene where I told Bill Paxton that we're no longer brothers because he was not doing something that was loyal to the family. And it was a late night where it was overnight in a barn. We were shooting and we shot all his coverage. And then by the time they got around to shoot my coverage of a very emotional scene, the sun was coming up. And so I knew I didn't have very much time. And during the first take, halfway through the take, I went, no, we got to go back to the top. It's not happening. Because I was so fearful of running out of darkness in order to shoot the scene. And the director came and said, what the hell are you doing? That was amazing. And I said, well, I don't know if it was amazing enough, but let's just go again. And I did it again. And it was still good, but that first take, you know, I censored myself, and I think it was probably really, really strong.
Wow. That was awesome.
But, you know, to be fair, Stephanie, when you say that, when you bring up a regret about acting or a take, it's going to have to get a little dark.
I'm only teasing you. Those are two amazing talents.
What's that? Being dark and sad?
No, I mean Harry Dean Stanton and Bill Paxton. Two amazing acting greats.
Yes, great people. Interesting human beings, too.
Okay, question two in our new More or Less game. Of your five senses, if someone said you had to live with one less, which one would you lose?
Hearing.
No, really? I said smell, because I even played this with the sidekick today, and she said, Mama, smell.
Yeah,
would have to be smell.
Smell would be the thing to go first, for
right.
Sure. I didn't even think about smell.
I should have ran them down first, right?
You should have told me what they were.
I'm so sorry. And most people are like, wait a minute.
There's
I can...
five senses. There's running, and there's feel, and no, you're absolutely right. Smell would be the thing.
All right, very good. If you had one more room in your house, what would you put in it?
A gym.
Really? Now, you're a healthy guy. You're always working out. Do you need that?
Yes. Yes, I want my own. I want to have all the equipment that I love.
Don't you enjoy that?
I have to go somewhere else to get.
Really?
One place.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
All right. All right, very good. Sean Doyle, in Canada, we are blessed with four seasons every year. If you had to live with one less, which one wouldn't you miss?
I would not miss spring in Ontario.
Really? Why?
Because it's like St. John. It's terrible.
Right.
It's kind of dangles the hope and dreams of summer over your head, but then it keeps dropping you back into almost winter.
Okay.
And that goes on for about 2 or 3 months.
Fair enough. Okay. Now, these are rapid fire, the answer to which will be more or less. Here we go. Pumpkin pie.
More.
Wi-Fi.
Less.
Thai food.
More.
Air travel.
Less.
Biopics.
Oh, less.
Really? Why do you say that?
Because they're rarely handled well. I mean, I love to... Everybody pick up an autobiography. You know, I find biopics very dogmatic and limiting.
Give me one that you liked.
Lawrence of Arabia is, I suppose, in a sense, a biopic.
No.
It's a dramatization of a life, so maybe that's not like
That's reaching. You're reaching now, but I'll we'll leave that.
Like Ray, just because.
Oh, yeah. Ray was great.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Brussels sprouts.
Less.
Interviews.
It depends with who.
Oh.
That's a self-indicting end.
My next one was interviews with people named Stephanie, because I knew you'd say less, and then I would feel awkward, and then I'd put that in to make you feel better. So if you had your choice, though, you'd say less interviews, right?
Well, only because I feel I'm not particularly good at them, because I just kind of ramble on and that sort of thing.
That is not true.
Less.
Less. Okay, very good. But of course, the caveat with me, yes, more. More is good, yeah. I'll pay you later. Okay, and our last question in the more or less game. Do you like it so far?
Yes.
Is it a keeper? Okay. All right. More. Our lives are filled with human connections. Here's the Oprah question. Not everyone is around forever. Some people drift in and out of our lives because we move or they pass on. If you could have one more day with one more person, who would it be?
Wowee.
Too deep?
John Neville. John Neville was a wonderful man that I didn't meet until late in his career when he was already suffering from the beginnings of dementia. But he was a prince of a man and incredible theater history. And I'd like another day to share stories or to hear his stories, for sure.
Cool. That's a great answer. Okay. Now, Sean Doyle, in our remaining moments, I have two more questions for you. They are arguably Oprah-esque, but again, she's one of my idols, so please bear with me when I ask you this. What would you tell that 25-year-old actor when he stood in front of the camera of Top Cops back in 1993 that you didn't know then, but you know now? What would you tell him?
I would tell that 25-year-old that, buddy, you are enough. You're interesting enough. You don't have to do anything, but you're not. And in fact, I have a quick story about that, but you probably don't have time.
All the time in the world, my friend. Go ahead.
There was a director named George Mendeluk, and he directed me in that Top Cop. I played the scene very dramatically, as I had done in my audition, my big choices, my big acting. And after the blocking, he hauled me aside. He said, come with me. Come here. Come over here. And we went into a back room, and he walked me through it and basically made me understand that I didn't have to do anything. I just had to think. I had to just breathe and be in my body and just, you know, play the scene like a human being would talk, not like a Norse god about to go to war, as an example. And I owe a lot to him. That was one of the kind of most profound film acting lessons I ever had, was George Mendeluk taking me to a back room and telling me just to calm down.
Cool. And you've been doing it great ever since. But okay, before I let you go, Sean Doyle, do you believe in destiny?
Yes.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You do?
No doubt.
Do you think everything that happens, happens for a reason?
I do.
Oh, that's so nice. You wouldn't believe how many people say no.
No, I think that, everything plays out as it's meant to play out. And sometimes one doesn't understand what that is until a long time later.
Yeah.
When Endgame, I did a series out west called Endgame, and that got canceled. And it turned out that there were many, many, many reasons why that was canceled for the betterment of my own personal life. But I would not have thought that at the moment when I was devastated.
Right. Great show, though. Great show. Gosh, we didn't even get a chance to talk about your accents. Oh, I can't believe it. We'll have to have you on again.
Yes.
Okay, now, and we just have a smidge more time left, so I've got to ask you. I know, and don't ask me. Actually, I do know because of social media, and you're very open about it, but you learn your lines best in the bathtub. Have I got that right?
Yes.
And now, when did that start, and how did you come to know that that worked?
It started way back on the first show, TV series, where I was a lead character, and I had a ton of lines to learn every night, called The 11th Hour. Or I think it's called Bury the Lead now when it plays in the States. And for me, I think that I have at least a touch of ADHD, if not more. And I need to be in a place where I cannot distract myself with anything. And so that seems to work for me. I get in a bath, and I use an app called Rehearsal App, which allows me to record a scene so I can record everybody else's lines, and it'll play it back for me. And then I can just gradually learn my lines doing that.
That's amazing. I didn't even know there was such an app.
It's an amazing app. all you actors out there who are listening to this, get it. You can highlight stuff, you can block stuff, you can add pictures, you can add notes, you can do anything. It's an incredible tool.
That's amazing. Okay, are you pruny?
In general, or what?
I just imagine, like, you know, you're pruny for a lot of your life because of this whole practice.
Well, let me tell you, I'm not pruny. And this is why. Because I use chlorine filters in all my water everywhere. Because chlorine is terrible for you. And one of the things that having a chlorine filter does is to make you not pruny. Because it's the chlorine that makes you pruny. I bet you didn't know that.
I did not know that. Gosh, we've learned so much. And Sean Doyle, this has been wonderful. I'm so grateful to you because you're always so kind to take the time to chat with us on CNBC. And now with this crazy little radio show, you've given me a full hour of your time, sir. And I am forever grateful.
Steph, you're one of my favorite people, you know that, and I always love talking to you.
Do whatever you can to watch Sean's Canadian Screen-nominated performance as Police Chief Peter Welland in Bellevue. The entire first season is available to stream on the CBC Player here in Canada, and if you're listening in the U.S., you'll find broadcast information for Bellevue at WGNAmerica.com. You can find Mr. Doyle as Samuel Grant in Frontier, with Season 1 streaming now on Netflix, and both Seasons 1 and 2 available in Canada at Discovery.ca. And for the extended podcast version of this chat, along with show notes and links, visit my website at cnbcscene.com. There you'll also find our many on-camera interviews with Sean, from our on-set chats to our red carpet conversations, and so much more. Thanks to Jason McDonald for our CNBC Seen and Heard theme music. Thanks to Sean Doyle for being my guest. And thanks to you for joining us today. Hope you will again next time on Cove FM. I'm Stephanie Beaumont. Be well till then.